We Have Issues is a weekly podcast full of reviews of comics and oversharing. We use grown-up language to make very childish jokes. You can find the show at wehaveissues.net, as well as anywhere else where average to not too bad podcasts can be found. Okay.
Are Tootsie Rolls just the same as Reasons? Do you remember Reasons? The chocolate tube.
Oh, God, Reason, the chocolate tube is lovely.
I don't know what they are.
Chocolate chew. Reasons, the chocolate chew.
I don't know what they are either.
Oh, they're lovely.
I don't know what.
And what are the other things? A Tootsie Roll and an American thing.
They both are. So my question is, because I have eaten both, and I don't know what they are, but they seem like they're the same.
So, as the only person who's... Are you asking me and James or the listener?
You and James?
Oh, because I think you're the only one who's got...
Oh.
But if you've eaten both...
they have this... Yeah, but I don't understand why they're two different things.
No, so what you're saying is they're very similar. Why aren't they...
And also, what are they?
It's like chocolatised plasticine, isn't it?
That's not very nice.
I don't know.
I like them.
I was trying really hard to navigate... to diplomatically navigate through my confusion of why you'd be asking two people who hadn't had both of them. And then James just bounced in like Paul Merton. What do you mean you haven't... That was funny, I liked it. You are the Paul Merton of this podcast.
Oh, wow,
it smells
that's
like
nice.
Cooked feud in here.
Cooked feud?
Cooked feud.
A cooked feud.
I think the Romulans and the Capulets have been in here before.
Oh, no, it's the mint mixed with your medicated sweet.
Oh.
It smells like curry.
Huh?
There's a.
Are you having a stroke?
Probably.
Oh, hello. There's. I thought I felt some movement. There's a place down the road from us. There's a.
From where we are right now?
No. From where I live. So I live in this road just off of High Street.
Yeah.
And there's
a place down there.
There's a mini industrial estate at the top where it's mostly like. It reminds me of, you know, 8 Ball's Garage in Grand Theft Auto?
Yes.
Reminds me a lot of that. At the top
it's just kind of there. It's not really an estate, is it? It's just like...
Yeah, it's definitely a chop shop.
People forgot to decide whether there were supposed to be houses or whatever there, and someone just stuck a tiny little bit of an industrial estate
there,
like, I know it.
Basically, the way my road goes is biker pub, chop shop, terrified middle-class people.
And then, are all of the other people on that street middle-class? I've not really seen any.
We're very middle-class. Anyway, down the bottom... there's a proper industrial estate with, like, you know, units and stuff. Although it's in the middle of a residential area. It's very strange. But anyway, there's a place down there called Curry on Wheels.
Right.
Where basically they cook shitloads of curry. And it's weird, like, you can tell...
Is that the measurement for curry?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
It's curry measured in shitloads.
Yeah. Only if they're cooking it in big enough quantities. And it's weird, in the mornings, I'll be walking the dogs and there's this sort of waft of curry... coming across from the industrial estate, and it depends how you're feeling first thing in the morning, whether it's a delicious, lovely smell or makes me retch. Which I was like foaming. I was retching so much the other morning when I was taking the dogs out. I was like foaming out of my mouth.
Okay, I don't.
I was really worried. I'm like, with two dogs, people are going to think I've got rabies.
Yeah, but what if you have got rabies?
Well, I don't think I would. It could be rabies. I've been to see the doctor a lot recently, and she did not say... She looked at my fucking hands and said, I think you might...
Yeah, were you foaming from the mouth at the time?
No, I wasn't.
Well, then
not from the mouth.
She looked at your hands and said...
Right, I went to see her for other issues.
Oh, don't talk about foaming in other areas.
It was...
Yeah. That's horrible.
That's all it is now. Just like...
foam out every...
Just like a lukewarm foam. I talked to her about a couple of issues, one of which sort of, you know, figures with my neuroses. But as I went to leave, I sort of, obviously, I went open-palmed. Oh, your hand's always that red.
Oh,
God, does she... Who is she? House MD?
She is. And I said, it's not lupus. I am...
Everyone else hear that pingy noise?
What...
I'm going to shut... I've got Facebook open on this.
Fucking hell.
It's making noises.
Why
have
you got Facebook open? What's wrong with you?
A reason. It's all right.
A reason,
shoe.
related.
And a Tootsie Roll. And she looked at my hands and said they're very red. And go, yeah, well, you just keep an eye on that, because that can be a sign of liver disease. Thanks a fucking lot for that. brilliant. Now I've got fucking... So now I've been obsessed with the redness of my hands and a potential of having liver disease. My gambit tour, they're ready in yours, mate.
Are they cold?
My closing... No. Mm. My closing gambit tour as I walked out the door was, well, I don't drink. How can I have a liver disease if I don't drink? That's crazy.
True. That's true. That is the one way to...
Although in my 20s, I used to drink to excess. All right.
I used to walk past...
Well, that's going to work well on an audio podcast.
Well,
you flapping your cord against
it,
the...
Have we? I just
yeah,
have
we have.
We
started
I've been dropping gold.
No,
have you not been listening?
I thought we were just chatting.
Yeah.
I don't turn it on
what
this
we,
much
so,
to
we,
chat
some,
to you two.
What we do with the show is the...
She just threw her empty Mentos packet in my face and I feel offended.
Oh, right.
Sorry, Nick. You were talking as well. That's really rude of us. Jane.
You started it.
Yeah, so what normally happens with a podcast is we pick a moment at which we're just having a conversation and then it just fades in after the music.
I thought you were still doing sound checks.
That was like, it seems like half my life ago. Do you have any idea how confused I am right now?
I neither know nor care.
I have had a cold for... You know how in doctor's surgeries it says, if you have the same cough for more than 2 weeks, they've got posters everywhere.
You've got lung cancer.
If you have the same cough for more than 2 weeks, please book an appointment to see your doctor. And you think, well, I don't want to be a fuss, and I can't really remember at which point the cold started. So you give it 3 weeks, and you go in and you say, I've had the same cough for 3 weeks, and they say... Oh, yeah, there's a cold going around at the moment. It takes about 4 to 6 weeks to go.
That's what my doctor told me, that this would take 4 to 6 weeks to lift. I, too, have the cold. I started on New Year's Day.
And when you have a cold for long enough, like we've had, you start to get other illnesses and bugs go around that you get on top of them, and then you get confused as to which symptoms are which.
I had an ear infection. I got an ear infection.
Is it an ear infection?
Oh, Jesus.
I can't hear in one ear.
I think I might have missed at least two. I'm almost done on my antibiotics, but I think I might have missed my afternoon one.
We've got to get used to this working out. We've got to work out how to schedule pills because we're getting quite old.
I take 4 every morning without my antibiotics, so I'm quite used to taking pills.
Do you have to take them in a particular sequence?
No, I take them all at once.
Cram them all at once.
Yeah.
But earlier in the week, our household, thankfully not the baby, but our household had a sickness and a thingy bug.
DMV.
So you, your wife and your dogs?
No, just me and my wife.
Oh.
She got it first and then I got it. And at the point where I realised I was going to be sick, because it didn't get me as badly as it did her, I actually for a moment thought, oh, wouldn't it be great if this vomit took care of all of the phlegm I've managed to build up over.
Oh,
if in among everything else that
call.
Came out.
It's a good call.
But that isn't what happened.
Life done well like that. I always think...
How long ago were you ill?
Monday, Tuesday.
When was the last episode you heard?
Of this? Last Thursday. I wasn't on Monday's Two Grown Men, though. It was it was Monday morning.
Was the last time you had any...
Oh, he's more than 48 hours,
oh,
clear.
I'm just checking.
Yeah.
I'm just checking.
I'm not going to
Do you
want to
take his temperature? Just stick your finger up his bum.
No, I wouldn't.
Isn't that ground zero of the...
I wouldn't
what,
recommend...
His bum?
Of the illness.
I wouldn't recommend sticking your finger up my bum at the best of times. It makes me feel very uncomfortable.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, if I just went up to him and stuck my finger up his bum, that would make him feel uncomfortable.
Well, it's difficult because I appreciate that there is an element of, from a purely physical perspective, there's an element of enjoyment to be had from it.
Mm.
But at the same time, I've had, you know, with my IBS, I've had it for, there's an emotional insecurity there that makes the physical enjoyment of it. So anyway, I'm Nick. You can find me on Twitter at NickSight. James is over there.
Hello.
And where can people find you, James?
At my home, mostly. Also, I've got a landline. It's Court Road in Southampton. You're more than welcome.
He's James Mond.
James Mond.
On Twitter.
I've raised my head above the parapet a bit recently as well.
I know, I noticed. You tweeted earlier on about how you were going to make a comment about something, but then you deleted it.
Yeah, what was I going to say
as
well?
Helpful.
The thing is, by the time I sort of rearranged it 3 times, I thought, I can't be fucking arsed for this.
And Jane?
Hello.
Can be found...
at Cover Jane.
On Twitter?
Yes.
So, I think...
Oh, I'm also on Xbox. I keep forgetting to tell people
Xbox.
That, yeah.
I'm on Xbox. I'm Nick on Xbox
I'm
as well.
Jane Momb, M-O-M-B.
M-O-M-B. I've got an Xbox 360 Elite with 23 games and two guitar controllers for sale, two standard controllers. If you're interested, we're looking for offers of around £150.
£150?
To be fair, you look at the games, that's less than a fiver a game. That's a bargain just for the games alone, let alone the Xbox Elite.
How's 250 the, CD, how's the DVD trailer doing? What's it called?
It's a perfect nick.
Drive.
Absolutely Drive. Perfect nick.
Because mine's going a
or
bit.
Tray.
Yeah. £150, it's yours, Nick.
They're really easy to replace. I'm fixed.
I'm trying to make a sale.
Oh, sorry.
What games do you have at your house that I haven't already borrowed off you and then never returned?
None. I've got one of your games I've never returned, but I think...
Is that in the bundle?
No. No, it's not, because you didn't give me permission to sell one of your games, but Jane did permission to sell one of her games.
I didn't know it was an issue. I've just been selling stuff that I've borrowed off people for ages. That's most of my Amazon shop is stuff. Not true. None of that's
no,
really
No, I tend
happened.
To remember. So, yeah, if you're interested in buying that, contact me on my Twitter handle. As long as you're close. I can't be arsed with posting it because that costs me an arm and a leg.
Well, you don't have to be close. As long as I want you to come pick it up.
You ain't be anywhere in the world if you want to come pick it up. I'm not posting it, though. Oh, it probably cost like 20, 30 quid to post a bloody thing, wouldn't it?
So, Jane's Jane Momb on Xbox. I am Nick Sight on Xbox. I don't go on there very much. Though. You play Minecraft a lot, don't you, Jane?
That's not always me.
Oh.
Partner Steve has a problem.
But he also has his own account on there.
He does, but because I started playing on my login and we got quite established under my login, when we're playing together, if I decide I don't want to play anymore, he has to be me to continue. He built an amazing house on it.
So he's cosplaying you on there.
I'm going to get a PS4 eventually, though.
Yeah, I
am. And when I do, my gamer tag in there will be Amazing Thunderhammer.
Really?
I don't know.
You're probably not trying to be consistent across all your things?
What's the fucking point? I called myself James Momb, and then you basically decided not to do the Momcast anymore, didn't he? That's how it went down. I'm only being flippant. I'm in quite a giddy mood. I feel great love for both of my colleagues in the room. I've made his head go red. I feel really bad.
No, it's funny.
Well, you're my colleagues here, my friends, when we step out that door.
The podcast that you're listening to, We Have Issues, also has a main Twitter account. It's Issues Pod, ISSUES Pod. And there's
P-O-D.
What?
We spell issues.
Oh yeah, no,
might as well spell freaking pod as well.
I'm nervous about my pronunciation of the word issues.
Fair enough. But if you're going to patronise someone, just do it the whole. Just get a whole hog.
I was sure that I'm.
He was helping, not patronising.
Am I not pronouncing pod properly now?
It's a fine line. No.
James is deaf. Don't forget that.
DEF.
Issues pod.
Issues. Issues pod.
And there's an email account that you can email us at issues.
issuespod@gmail.com.
You can also listen to all of the past episodes of this show. In all the show notes, there's always lots of show notes, and you can subscribe in whatever podcatcher you choose to subscribe using. As iTunes, I like that. I don't like that. Yeah. I like Pocket Casts. Apparently, iOS has quite a good podcast app now, but I don't know.
Yeah, it does.
I
use it.
Oh.
And I like it.
Good. That's a glowing endorsement.
Thank you. Only today I was using it to listen to Doug Loves Movies.
You love Doug.
Do.
Is that the same Doug who gets high?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, he's a famous
slumber. I love that guy.
I do love him. Yeah, he's cool.
Okay. Should we talk about comics? I kind of...
We're out of time.
Yeah. I'm kind of... forgotten what we normally do because it feels like it's been ages and I've got a head full of cauliflower.
Om nom nom.
I'm at the stage in this cold where my ear, it keeps feeling like the ball of phlegm in my head has shifted enough that I can hear things and breathe again for a few seconds, and I think maybe this is the end, maybe this is when it goes again, and then it all shifts back down again and I'm like, oh no, I'm fucked.
No, I've got blocked here. I've got an ear syringing on Monday coming up, which I'm really looking forward to. But I'm so blocked up because the doctor tried to look in my ear and she was wriggling about and it's infected, it hurt. And she was just criticising me for the amount. Well, not criticising me, but I can't see it because of all the wax. I'm like, oh, I'm so filthy. My ear automatically produces filth in my body.
What, are you two any good at blowing your noses?
No.
I've never learned how.
No, I'm not good at nose blowing.
What do you mean, just blowing your nose?
Yeah, just literally, Jane has so much nose blowing privilege, she can't even
fathom that you wouldn't be able to do it. Is there a particular way of doing it? I just blow my nose.
No, you just blow it. Yeah, but I can't do it. And I don't really now, whenever I try and do it, I just feel inadequate as well. It all hurts a little bit.
Okay, so it's the same as when you're trying to blow up a balloon, blowing your nose.
Don't like blowing up balloons either.
But you have to sort of control. Yeah, you have to sort of control the force.
Okay.
Nice. Is it like playing a didgeridoo? Do you have to do circular breathing?
Well, it's kind of, like when you're playing a wind instrument, you don't sort of puff out your cheeks. The same when you blow your nose, you don't just...
No, you do puff out your cheeks.
Some you do. I mean, like, you don't...
And then you kind of, it's like crossing your eyes, but not crossing your eyes, and you're focusing at a point just beyond the picture rather than at the picture, and at that point you can see the 3D. Is that what it's like? Because it sounds like that's what it's like.
It sounds like a magic eye
for your nose.
So when you blow up a balloon, if you puff out your cheeks, it hurts and it hurts your ears. Like when you blow your nose with no inhibition that you're just going to blow your nose without controlling the force of it.
Now I feel a bit bad.
Oh, maybe I should teach you.
Now I feel a bit bad because I think Jane might be blowing up balloons wrong, and then so I've got balloon blowing up privilege. I've never been able to get the hang of it. So I am. And when James said that they're going to swinge his ears out, I was just
sorry.
Like, why don't they just? Why
they
don't doctors just prescribe you swinges for like? Why do I have to learn how to blow my nose? Why can't they just give me something?
You can get a saline wash that you squirt into your nose and it'll clear everything out.
But can you then suck everything out using it and look
can't
at it and go,
suck.
Oh,
I
that's
wouldn't,
a cheap way. A cheap way of doing that is you can have a tramp piss up your nose.
Oh, James!
What?
Is that your specialty?
I dress up like a tramp and I piss up people's noses.
He's not a tramp just because of his earwax. Jesus. Nope. You can send using that email address I mentioned earlier on, you can send us contributions as well. We do sometimes have contributions on the show later on. We will have Clarky, the Crawl of Dissected Worlds, talking about Mike Plug's L. Frank Baum adventures.
Now, Clarky, they're doing something very exciting.
I know.
Have you seen their tweet?
That's what I've got up on Facebook.
Oh, you're going to talk about it?
No,
good.
No, I don't.
About it.
No, but I don't really understand it.
Well, it's a live gaming thing, that, which is confusing because it's called Tabula Rasa, which is weird because a friend of ours made a game called Tabula Rasa that I did an unused instructional. What's it called when you talk and you're telling people how to do things?
Tutorial.
Thank you.
Tabula Rasa. I
can't remember that.
It was unused. Oh god, it took me ages.
It means
as well.
It's Latin for blank slate.
Yeah. So it's
I learned
weird
that from the X-Men.
It's one of those things. What's it called when you've never heard of something and then all of a sudden you see it everywhere? Because I've seen
there's a word for it.
I know there is. Yeah.
And it's like German. It's sort of something. It's a psychological.
Schuldenladen. But it's a live gaming event that they're holding up somewhere in the north. And if you've got the Facebook page up, that'd probably be a good way of people finding out what it's about. But I think it sounds really exciting.
It's called Dissecting Worlds Live. That's the podcast they do, and it's a great podcast where they look at different fictional worlds through the prism of social sciences, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, they say it's through the prism of social sciences. Really, they just think at it really, really hard using their brains.
Yeah.
But it works quite well. And they argue a lot about Vikings, I think that's something they do.
It's a worthy argument to have.
But that's Matt and Keyhart, and they're doing Dissecting Worlds Live. But unlike when we've done live podcasts in the past, it doesn't sound like they're doing a live version of their podcast. It's they're actually making a, because they're both very involved or have been in the past in role playing and storytelling, role playing and stuff like that. So it's going to be about world building.
Yeah.
Like creating a world and communities and like a colony. I think that's the plan. You can read more about it at their page. I'll put a link in the show notes to it. But if
you go to
dissectingworlds.wordpress.com, it'll be one of the top posts. It's called Announcing Dissecting Worlds Live. And it's going to be on Saturday, the 21st of February in Leeds. So not that great for us down here because we're bloody miles away. But if you're near Leeds, it'll be 12 to 5, and it's in a pub.
I think there's some talk of if it's successful, sort of making it a little bit bigger and I don't know.
They're doing it in other places.
Yeah.
Which would be quite cool. They're very smart guys.
Yeah.
Very entertaining. Clarky's quite cantankerous, but that's not a bad thing. Matt's a nice man.
I feel like I get on with Clarky and I don't get it because I'm such a sort of mild-mannered and meek young man. It's strange. You'd think, again, more Paula Abdul and Scat Cat. You know, the air conditioning stopped again. I always think that's when...
You only think you've died or gone deaf or something.
I always think it's when the narcs are going to come in. It's like, you know, when you're on a plane and you have that little moment of panic when your ears go and you can't hear the engines anymore. I hate that.
Shall we talk about this week's comics?
We promised 10 minutes ago we were going to do that.
I made no promises.
I was just filling time until we got round to it.
I haven't been great at reading 2000 AD recently, but Progs 1912 and 1913, worth mentioning that since the beginning of this year, I think it started in the big annual that they did at the end of the year, they've started doing their long-promised Return of the Dark Judges story.
Mm.
And it's written by John Wagner and with art by Greg Staples. In these two progs, the most recent ones, that's the only thing I've actually had a chance to read yet. But the art's gorgeous. It's gorgeous, fully painted art. And it's two different stories on Earth in Megacity. Judge Dredd is carrying out an investigation, trying to work out where the remains or where evidence of Judge Death is leading to. And at the same time, there's a colony ship full of very rich people going out into space. And it becomes apparent very quickly that a human possessed by Judge Death is on that ship.
Ooh.
And it's kind of, there's this really interesting, we're finding out about that, what's going on the ship through the very clueless narration of the guy who's in charge of the ship, who's like the mayor of the ship or whatever. Mm. But underneath this kind of this closed ship, this closed environment horror story is playing out that's really interesting. And at some point, these two threads are obviously going to meet up. But it's really, the scale of it's really interesting. I love the idea of this closed community. And so when one person goes missing or two people go missing, it's noticed, but they don't necessarily know what's going on, which just doesn't happen in Megacity. Normally in Dread, there are so many millions of people in the city.
You don't notice when a few go.
Yeah.
They always did middle-level bureaucrats. Hapless mid-level bureaucrats have always been a feature of Dread stories, isn't it? Sort of poking sort of fun at that rather ineffective level of bureaucracy.
Especially when one of the old guard like John Wagner's writing it.
Yeah.
It's a much better John Wagner story than I think the most recent one was. I can't remember much about it, but I remember being a bit let down by a recent John Wagner story, but this one's really good.
Cool.
I also read the first part of a 6-part Adventure Time spin-off called Marceline Gone Adrift.
Ooh.
Now, this was partly because it felt like a bit of a quiet week for me at the comic shop.
I do like Marceline. She is cool.
I love her, and that's pretty much why I picked it up. The Adventure Time comics, when I've read them, have been really, really good, but there's just so many of them that I haven't bothered getting into them. This was $3.99, and it's written by Meredith Gran, with art by Peetsch, so I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. But I think that's part of our charm, mispronunciation of names.
I think it is our MO and USP.
Mm. And our charm.
Yes.
MOUSP. Our USPMO.
Yeah.
The
what's he said? I don't
understand
what he said.
Just agree.
The art is reflective of the cartoon style, but also really nice and rough, really beautiful. It's like kind of slightly deeper coloring than you normally get in the cartoon, which is much bolder. The story is about how Marceline, now that she's in a band that's actually touring. Now that her band's actually touring, she's all of the songs she wrote before were kind of passionate about things she cared about, but now all she's really been experiencing for the last few months is sitting on a couch with Jake and Finn eating nachos. So
nice.
She's feeling despondent because she can't write anything with any real passion. And then something weird happens and she gets gripped by this weird power and gets dragged to... Is it the Candy Kingdom? Is that what it's called? Where Princess...
Bubblegum.
Bubblegum,
yeah.
Is. She gets dragged there and Princess Bubblegum has to do something drastic to handle the situation because Marceline somehow is gripped by this power that she can't control and it's wrecking the whole town. So she basically, the upshot is Marceline. I think this comic is going to be about Marceline either out in space or out in the wilderness. The cover shows her drifting in space. Oh, and I think it's going to be like a journey of her, and maybe there's going to be an element of PB trying to rescue her, because there's loads of stuff in this about how Princess Bubble... Is she Princess Bubblegum?
Yeah.
So it's the Candy Kingdom.
Yeah.
And she's Princess Bubblegum.
Yeah.
There's nobody in it called Buttercup.
Yes.
Who's Buttercup?
The elephant.
Ah, see, I think that always confuses me a little bit when I try and talk about it.
Because you think Princess Bubblegum should be Buttercup?
No, they sound too similar and it confuses me.
Just quickly.
She's made of bubblegum, so it shouldn't confuse me.
James, are you familiar with Marceline?
No.
She's a vampire.
She's a vampire.
Oh, no, we have met her then.
Oh, okay.
And she... The good thing about this comic is it has loads of the energy from Adventure Time. The art's really pretty. It's really nicely written. The characters are all as I recognize them. But of the two comics, I bought two comics in the comic shop, yesterday. And both of them kind of had slightly the same problem, but in different ways for me. Both of them, and we're going to be talking about the other one in a minute with James. But they're both part of licenses. One's Star Wars, the other one's Adventure Time. Okay.
Can you hear music?
Oh, I can hear it a little bit. Yeah. Is it loud enough that it be picked up?
I don't know. It's quite loud, though. I wasn't sure if it was...
Oh, no, it'll probably be okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for pointing it. No, it's fine. The one Star Wars, one's Adventure Time. And the thing I noticed about both of these comics really is, although the Adventure Time comic might work for someone who wasn't already familiar with the cartoon, it's because it's trying to set up a situation for a 6-issue series, it kind of requires a little bit of foreknowledge of the characters. For it to have the most charm it can possibly have, you really need to know the characters already. Whereas I know a lot of the Adventure Time comics are kind of, they're done in one stories that kind of reflect the charm of the cartoon a little bit, where you can just watch them and you're immediately taken in and they've got, they're quite interesting. So I really liked it, but as a single issue, if you like Adventure Time, it's definitely worth picking up. It looks the part. It's really cute. The characterization in it's really cute. There's lots of things. There's a couple of things that happen in this first issue that look like they're going to make for some nice, cute, heartfelt drama in later issues. One thing that was a bit of a surprise for me with the cartoon of Adventure Time was that once they started putting Marceline, I really like Marceline as a character, the vampire. She's cool. She's a bit cute as well, actually. But I'm not sure if that's inappropriate because she's hundreds of years old, but at the same time, everyone else in the comics really young. So in the cartoons really young. So I don't know. But she's kind of cute. I've got a crush on her, is what I'm basically saying.
Jeez.
And what surprised me from the cartoon was how once you started putting her in scenes with PB, with Princess Bubblegum, not Buttercup, it actually worked really well. They play off each other really, really well. And I think there's going to be more of that down the line in this comic. But I couldn't recommend it to someone who doesn't already love Adventure Time because this is a setup issue, very much a setup issue. A little bit happens in it, but you don't get loads of that Adventure Time charm. That I didn't feel like I saw enough of Marceline in this issue, really. In fact, there's more of Princess Bubblegum in this. Not Buttercup. than there is marceline. So
okay.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, because I was casting around, because I like I said, I felt like I'd had a really quiet week, comics-wise, is a comic from DC called Grayson, which is on it's on about issue 6. I'm just trying to get it up on my tablet because I ended up buying it on Comixology.
Is it Dick?
Eh?
Dick, yeah.
Dick Grayson.
So you're trying to get
I'm trying to get Dick up on my tablet, and it's not working.
No, you're over 40 now, mate.
That's so rude. It's written by Tim Seeley, and I think it's Tom King. They are doing the plots together, but I think they're alternating issues at the moment. And as I know Jane and James know, but the listener might not have worked out, I don't really read any DC comics at the moment. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of trouble getting on board since the relaunch a couple of years ago. I've not really been able to get the hang of the continuity, and it seems to be just as dense as it always was, to be honest. So there are only odd books I've been picking up, and usually they've been completely separate from they've been books that are completely separate from any sort of continuity. But I think I must have seen some panels of Grayson somewhere, or it's possible. It's possible that as part of the whole launch of Gotham Academy, which is a really cute looking and nice book set in a prep school. I don't think it's just girls, but it's mainly about these teenage girls having adventures in this big old school with the shadow of, you know, Batman's a shadowy figure in the background of what's going on in there. In this, I don't know what it's taken to get him there, but Grayson... is about Dick Grayson, who is working undercover. At some point in the recent past, he's had to fake his own death to handle some situation that was happening in the Bat books, maybe?
He's an undercover Dick.
Yes, he's an undercover Dick. Yes, very good, James. You're just going to keep making that same joke, aren't you?
Well, no, I'm going to keep making Dick jokes when the opportunity... But even if you weren't reviewing a Dick Grayson book, I'd be doing that.
Why is Comixology so difficult?
It can be, can't it?
It's a bloody nightmare. Right. I think the reasons that have got Grayson into the situation he's in are quite, and maybe quite complicated and a little bit convoluted. I'm not sure. But what effectively this comic is about is he's faked his death. I think people know that he was Robin and Nightwing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's ended up working for a shadowy espionage organization called Spiral, I think. I'm having to go on all of this from memory because I haven't got the comic in front of me. This organization that all of the agents have these implants, which and this software, which means that their faces always appear as indistinct to people. So he can still exist as an agent for this organization with people thinking he's dead. But he's walking a tightrope, often literally, but figuratively, because...
Well, he's got circus skills. It comes easy to him.
I know, it's clever, I think.
Yeah.
Because he's actually gathering information on this organization for Batman. Batman's hardly in this book at all, though, which is good. So there is this continuity, there's this stuff that's going on. But how the stories of in each issue pan out, and nearly every issue is kind of a standalone adventure in its own right. All of these plot lines are ongoing, but each issue is kind of a story in its own right. What you get is him on these wild espionage adventures, these sort of James Bond or Alias, the TV series-esque adventures where he's having to gather information or... artifacts or whatever for this organization, while at the same time trying to get information on the organization, while at the same time kind of having identity crises because he gets on with, he's got a camaraderie of the other agents he's working with, they trust each other, but they only know so much about each other and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you also get this underlying thing, which is the thing that I really like and you don't get in a lot of really continuity-heavy comics, which is you get this real sense of character. Dick Grayson is obviously the character you see the most, but he's such a, in among all of the high-stakes, high-stress situations he's in, he's such a vibrant and energetic character, and he's written really well. Like, he clearly enjoys doing the spy stuff, even though he's not entirely, you know, he's being asked sometimes to do things that go against what he would do ethically, and he has to walk that line as well. Will he kill? He won't. You know, he's being asked to kill. Will he kill? And stuff like that. Each story I've read so far has been really good. The most recent issue, number 6, isn't the best example of a comic you can just, an issue you can just pick up and read, because there is quite a lot of this weird, the behind the scenes stuff of what powers this organization, the secrets that he's trying to uncover, are kind of, they're like a slightly watered down for DC continuity version of some of the really weird conspiracy shit that happened in Grant Morrison's Invisibles.
Okay.
They might even be elements that have been entered into the Bat universe by Grant Morrison. I don't know. The guy above him in this organization that he's trying to find out about, the people he's taking orders from are metaphysical and a little bit weird. And so there is this element to it as well. Midnighter keeps turning up, and I thought that would be something that would really irritate me about the DC 52 version of Midnighter. But he works really well as a foil to Grayson, because he thinks he's a good guy. But Midnight is a pretty good, if you're going to have a guy who thinks he's a good guy but keeps getting into fights with your actual good guy who's a double agent, Midnight is a good one, because for a hero, he's pretty murdery. He's quite a violent, angry dude. So it's quite interesting having him there as this. When he turns up, things really get interesting. The art is gorgeous. I think it was as good as the writing is, I think it was probably the art that got me really into the comic. I'm just going to try and find out who it is who's doing the art. It's really crisp and clear, and the...
Crisp and clear,
that's who's doing
it. Artist.
The action and the scale of the action and the movement in the action works really, really well. Because it's this really crisp, clear style, but the characterization as well. There's a whole issue where, because Grayson's base of operations, where this organization has him hidden away, is because it's an international, he's getting jetted off to all parts of the world for these adventures. His base of operations, they've squirreled him away in this old prep school for girls in England. It's like an old castle. It's exactly what you'd expect in an American comic if you had it's a little bit Hogwarts, it's a little bit St. Trinian's, sort of really old buildings and the chapel and all of this stuff. Which should irritate me, because it's very twee. It's very Richard Curtis.
Those places exist, man.
Yeah, I know. And
some people really like Richard Curtis and his oeuvre.
I know. I'm not one of them, though. There's a whole issue where they're kind of only supporting characters in it, but we've seen a little bit of the girls who are at this school and who get into scrapes and stuff. And a couple of them have noticed this hunky guy. They can never get a clear picture of his face, but they've noticed this hunky guy, and they're quite lewd about him, as lewd as you can get in a comic like this. They're teenage girls talking about this guy's butt and all of this stuff.
Wow.
And this school is, it's kind of school where all of the big crime lords and everyone send their kids. So they're being trained they've got proper lessons, but they're also being trained in acrobatics and shooting and stuff like that. And there's this whole issue where he notices that they're like looking in his window from a tree or something. And so he decides, well, fuck it, I might as well have some fun. And just, no, James. James's eyebrows went right up. And just kind of starts doing, like, Jim leads them on a gymnastic chase around the grounds of the school. Because he's like, well, if I'm stuck here, he's Dick Grayson. He's like, if I'm stuck here, I might as well...
Parkour.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of that going on. And there's like a whole, almost a whole issue given over to something fun like that, even though all of the other stuff's also going on in it. It's a really good comic. The art is by Mikael Janin.
You said Crispin Clear.
Yeah, that was a hoax. That was a red herring.
Oh, right.
It's actually by Mikael Janin or Michael Janin or Michael Janin. I'll find out what the proper
name. iVampire.
I think he did. I might have done.
Soon to be hit TV series, Internet Vampire.
Is it?
Mm.
Ooh. Still bloody cancelled it.
I don't know. It's weird, isn't it? He might also have done a bit of JLA Dark as well. I get the feeling that might be where I've seen that particular art before. Really, really nice. I like it a lot. I think it's pretty cheap on Comixology. I don't think it's a high
not cheap
cover price comic.
Good value.
Good
for
value
money.
For money. Yes, very good value.
Well done, James.
Thank you,
James. You got comics, a comic, comics, a comic, comics.
Two. I've got two comics.
Question mark.
Shall I do the one that we haven't both read?
Yeah, do it
first, and then we'll talk about the one that we have both. It's on Comixology, so we could be here a while.
Fucking Comixology.
It's working for James. It's working for James.
Where's my? Why won't it bring up the menu?
Just press it once.
You know when I've.
Oh, is it not working for you either, Jane?
When I've got .cbr files from Humble Bundles, they're really easy to look at. But
it came up a minute ago.
Oh, I know what you've got.
The book I'm going to talk about actually comes with a complimentary DRM-free download as well.
Ooh. That's how you should do it.
I haven't read monthlies for a little while, and I bought a couple this week, which is exciting. And I wanted to get into what the kids are talking about now. What's cool? What's happening in the world of comics? And I know that Rat Queens, soon to be a popular animated series,
ooh,
is where Curtis J. Weeb's Rat Queens is where the kids are at the moment. So there's this one shot at the moment, written by Curtis J. Weeb with art by Tess Fowler. Excuse me, I did a little burp there. I'm sure that won't. And it's a story about this orc lady, I think. And she's called Braga, I think. No, that's Brendan Braga did the...
She's called Braga.
That's it. Now it's come
when
up.
When you say orc, you mean O-R-C orc, not she's just a bit awkward.
No, not at all.
Not orcs.
So she's...
Or norks.
Norks. Well, she's got norks.
Has she?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Everyone in Rat Queens has. It's kind of their USP and their MO.
Yep.
It's their USP MO.
And so if you're not familiar with the world of Rat Queens, I think it centres around four main female characters set in a sword and sorcery D&D style world, but it's quite saucy and lewd and...
It's very sassy.
Sassy's an excellent word.
It's written in a very contemporary style, isn't it? The dialogue really clips along and they're quite sassy to each other.
They are. So and this story sees us Braga... enjoying a cup of coffee early one morning and reminiscing about how she came to be, who she is, where she is, and why she left her tribe. And that's the story, basically, is her as a young man with her tribe. It's kind of a coming-of-age story.
Her as a young man?
Oh, yeah, it's...
Well, yeah, that was the first thing that confused me, and it's not really cleared up in this particular... In this particular book, is apparently she was a dude.
Gender in at least one of the races in this. I think it came up in maybe the most recent issue of the comic. But gender is definitely quite flexible in at least one of the races in this world.
So is it kind of like
this
if
one.
All yeah. the females die out, the males will become females?
No.
Oh.
Isn't that like jellyfish or something? I don't know.
I don't know if it's really been explained in this world yet, but I think it's just that it's quite.
It's a thing
the gender
that we
can
accept.
Be quite fluid. Because there's one race, I think they're like the gnomes, who or we've only met female characters, but they all have beards. Everyone, all of them have beards.
Oh.
So
beards are in right
the,
now.
The
you're both quite fashionable.
The comic does play around quite a lot with expectations of gender and stuff. It's quite pretty. It's pretty interesting, and it does put you on the back foot a little bit, but it's keeps things spot. Is it a bit reductive to say they're sassy just because it's a comic that's all about female characters?
I didn't say it, you did. So
I don't think sassy's just for women. I think anyone can be sassy.
You're okay. Sassy.
They're sassy. But yeah, oh sorry, James, go on.
No, you're not. So we see Braga back with her tribe, and it's, I'm obviously, having not read it before, I'm not sure. She looks like she might be a fearsome warrior, but my goodness, we get some evidence that that's the case. And as I say, it's a coming of age story. So essentially, she's proved herself in combat. Her father wants to give up his position as the king. He's lost his arm. He's a bit ineffective, and she doesn't want to be any part of it. She doesn't want to be part of a reductive race. It's essentially. Yeah. She doesn't think they're going anywhere. They're sort of their violence is very narrow-sighted. Their plan's very narrow-sighted. She rejects that opportunity. And then there's a power struggle between her and her brother.
Mm-hmm.
That essentially is the story in a nutshell. It's told very well, really well written. The characters are immediately kind of identifiable in terms of, you know, what motivates them, who they are. There's lots of action, and I enjoyed it. The art is beautiful. Tess Fowler does a really nice job on the art. However, it's not something I think I could possibly recommend to someone else who hasn't
read
Rat Queens,
yeah.
Because it left me, and that's the fault of the reader rather than the book necessarily, because I know the book, basically, I think they do 6 issues, have 2 months off, and then 6 issues, so they have gaps. And this book is filling the gap, I think, between series at the moment. But you definitely need to, I think, to have some prior knowledge to get the most out of this book.
Do you think you'll go and read those other issues?
This has inspired me to go and want to read more Rat Queens. One thing I would say, though, it reminded me very much at the end of a Viz parody of the cartoon strip George and Lynn.
All right.
Where the Viz parody, George and Lynn, if you're not familiar, used to appear in The Sun, I think. And they were generally, it was about a couple who were generally naked.
Mm-hmm. Middle class, upper middle class.
Upper middle class naked couple. 3-panel strip. This Viz cartoon played out where it was George, and the first panel he said, "Lynn." And she said, "What?" He said, "Quick." She said, "What?" And the last, he said, "Quick, sit up." And then the last panel is her sit up. And he says, "The cartoon was about to end and no one had seen your tits."
Yeah.
And this is kind of, there is an ending that was a little bit like that. It's like, we apologise for the lack of nudity. Here's some now. but again, because I haven't read Rat Queens, it's difficult for me to fit it into the context of the series as a whole, rather than being a little bit of like, It was a nice cheeky way to end, which is, I guess, a spoiler, so I apologise for that. Although the story itself is kind of bookended, so
mm-hmm.
but because I don't know Braga's character very well, it felt a really harsh juxtaposition between the character I'd been reading, this young man who'd rejected the opportunity to lead his people in this middle section of the book, and then this very randy woman at the end of it. It was very, very odd, but very enjoyable book nonetheless.
Rat Queens is a really interesting book in that it's the ongoing is a really interesting series in that I noticed that when I read them, because I read them all at once about a month or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really, really good.
Yep.
But I think it is very popular with female readers.
Okay.
And I can understand why, because it's got lots of, or nearly all of the characters are women.
Mm.
They pretty much all have agency.
Mm.
They're funny. They're like nails hard, all of them. And it's really bawdy as well. But it's written, and aside from this one shot, I think it's written and drawn by guys.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where you could take several panels out of context,
yeah,
and show the nudity and show some of the nudity and stuff like that in. And it could look quite exploitative. But it absolutely isn't, though, I think.
And
but it's a weird line.
I didn't really necessarily get that, because there was enough set up at the beginning, I guess, for me to feel that it wasn't necessarily out of character. But as I say, because the main section of the story's in flashback back to when Braga was a dude, it was a bit, although I call women dudes as well, so a fella, it was a little bit confused. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and yes, I will go back and I'll be reading more Rat Queens, primarily though for the nudity.
Yes, I can see that.
I like nudity in comic books.
The art's always gorgeous in it. Whoever they've had working on the art, it's always been gorgeous. So I think the next book you've got to talk about might be why I was a bit nonplussed by the stuff on. I get the feeling a lot of people didn't bother launching their comics this week because they knew that this book was about to come out.
Yeah, I'd keep out of the way if Star Wars was dropping, to be honest with you. I think they're talking about it's going to be a million copy, or they're looking at something like a million issues, aren't they?
Was it you who retweeted Rob Liefeld on that?
I can't remember. I don't know. I don't think so. Not on this occasion. But I must say, before we talk about it, the number of variants on this book is cynical to the point where it actually kind of put me off buying it to a certain extent. I've bought it on Comixology, so I don't actually have a physical copy of it. But there were lots of people sort of. Were you having a conversation with someone about the relative value of big launches? You were, weren't you? You're talking about what was the big book that you said ended up being used as
X-Men number one, Jim Lee comic, seen as one of the biggest hit comics, I think, of the 90s.
Yeah.
That and the Rob Liefeld tweet I saw, which I assume was real, but I saw someone retweeting it, was him saying, oh, well done for your million copies. X-Force number one by me in the 90s did however many, some ridiculous number. Because in the 90s, there were lots of variants and there was lots of, the sales were much larger. But someone else has pointed out in the last couple of days, and I know this from experience of X-Men 1 as well, that just because the publishers sold lots of comics doesn't mean that thousands and millions of those comics aren't still sitting in comic shops.
Yeah.
A lot of comic shops will have sunk under the weight of some of those comics.
And I think what worries me as well is you get the impression that people are buying these books for an investment. That never pans out with a massive book like this.
Yeah.
The books that go for big money on eBay are rarity. Scarcity is what creates that demand, and I don't think but Star Wars is such an easy franchise to exploit that, because there is a rabid fan base that will buy anything that has that logo on it, and it's the cynicism of it that makes me feel deeply uncomfortable.
It's and to illustrate that a little bit, I only bought this comic, it's a great creative team, but I only really bought it because I needed something to talk about for this episode, and I hadn't considered going and looking on Comixology yet. So I was faced with shelves that didn't really have much else on them. And I got the last... It's a photo variant of Luke Bloody Skywalker looking into the distance.
All whimsical.
But I got this, and I was standing there talking to the guys in the in Forbidden Planet in the comic shop. And this was in my tiny little pile of comics. And another guy came in who was looking for a Star Wars comic. And because I'd got the last of the normal priced variants, the only thing he would have been able to buy was a 15 quid.
Jesus.
A 15 quid variant that they had a few copies of left. They're probably still going to sell those.
Yeah.
But obviously I felt a little bit bad because I was buying it to talk about it on a podcast. And he couldn't buy a normal priced copy of a comic on the day of release. There's all sorts of factors involved in that. But yeah, FP had sold out of it by Wednesday lunchtime.
And I think it is impossible to talk about it without acknowledging the hoopla that has surrounded it as well. I wasn't actually going to buy the first issue. I was going to trade weight it.
Yep.
Be honest with you.
It's a valid decision.
I do. But it starts in time on a tradition, doesn't it? So it starts with a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. There's a double page splash with the logo, and then you have a crawl, and this is book one, Skywalker Strikes.
Yes.
And it starts in traditional fashion as well, doesn't it, with a starfield and a ship passing over our heads. So they're using the same tricks, and it's basically an emissary of Jabba the Hutt has turned up at one of the Carillion factories that the Empire use to create their war machine, who's going to negotiate for trade rights with the Empire.
Can I ask a question? So there was the Dark Horse run, and that's finished now.
Well, no, there was a Marvel Star Wars
years and years ago,
and then
but recently there was a Dark
doesn't count now.
The Brian Wood series,
yes. Which when you guys were, or at least I think James was picking that up when we found out that Disney had bought Star Wars and Disney owned Marvel.
Yeah.
So the Dark Horse comic run has finished, and now we have, this is the new Marvel run.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they've taken the stance, I think a little while ago now, of saying that everything that isn't in the films up till now, everything that isn't in the films is no longer canon. So to the extent,
what?
To the
so
extent
these are
anything
based
counts.
On in the film?
No, you can only read these books in a canon.
Yeah. Specifically, it has to be canon.
Good. I have a canon.
Well, no, not just any canon. It has to be canon of Cannon and Ball.
No.
No, it has to be an ion canon, and it has to be based on Hoth. So you have to travel.
Tommy Ion Cannon.
Tommy.
What about a cannon printer?
Wait a minute. Tommy Cannon.
Yeah.
Is that a reference to World War II? I don't know. No, probably not. A cannon printer. That's the right spelling as well. She's a genius.
Yeah.
It's a little bit weird, because I think previously everything was they said that everything counted except
even the Phantom Menace.
Except
any of the prequels count. All these brilliant comics that have been written, the fucking prequels are still counting. Yeah. Fuck off. Stick your midichlorians up your ass while you're at it.
Famously, they said the only thing that didn't count. To begin, a little while ago, George Lucas said the only thing that didn't count was the Green Rabbit Jackson from the original Marvel.
Oh, and the Holiday Special.
And the Holiday Special.
Which is better than the prequels.
But now they've said that only the stuff in the films counts, and anything that comes from now on. Anything in the films,
right, so
anything that Disney owns.
Counts.
Counts.
So they own the old films, so I guess the rights to the old films.
So Fantasia is now part of Star Wars canon.
Yeah, it's all part of that. It's all Steamboat
Mickey's
Willie.
He's getting a bit old for this shit, isn't he?
Who?
Mickey.
Mickey is, yeah.
75, isn't he?
Getting a bit old for this shit is a different franchise, though. I think that's Lethal Weapon. Might be getting a bit confused. Another thing that's noteworthy about this, though, in relation to that Dark Horse series, when was the Dark Horse series set? Was it between the first two films?
At the same time that
this story is set.
When you say first
set
two,
everything.
you mean the first two films released, or the first two
first
as in
two
the prequel?
Films released, episode
the
four
the
and
first two
five.
That actually count.
So, anyway, sorry,
so,
we went on a bit of a tangent.
Sorry, I needed some background.
I think I'd already distracted him by repeating something that he'd already said anyway. So
the ship turns up at the Carillion dockyards, and obviously Star Wars fans will be familiar with the Carillion shipyards. Obviously Han Solo in A New Hope says he can outrun these big Carillion, doesn't it? The big Carillion cruisers. So it's part of the lore already, so it's exciting to see. But we find out that it's actually Han Solo is the emissary. And basically it turns out that the rebels have intercepted Jabba the Hutt's emissary, and they've used the ship to get to this factory to disrupt it. Isn't that right? That's the story, and have I nutshelled the story?
Yes, pretty much.
Yeah.
And all of the main elements, or all of the characters you'd expect to be in a comic set between the first two films.
All of the boxes are ticked.
All of the boxes are ticked.
Every single one of them.
Yes.
Because in the proper New Hope, we haven't met Boba Fett yet.
No.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
He's
not in it, I think is what I'm saying, isn't it?
Yeah. So so what did you think, though? I mean,
I thought...
Because you love Star Wars.
I do. I absolutely adore Star Wars, you know, much as I complain about hating those prequels. I've watched them so many times. I was very impressed. I thought the story got going really quickly. I thought there's a ton of like really enjoyable cookies there for Star Wars fans. I thought the characterization was great. I thought the dialogue was great. I thought there's some even though it's quite fast paced, the action, there's particularly a panel between Han Solo and Princess Leia that was just a really lovely character moment if you know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like the blooming of something more than just sort of turning up and taking the money, you know. The art as well, I think, is lovely. The characters look how you would expect them to, and I think that's something that always maybe shackles artists, is having to, you're basically, you know, each panel's a portrait of a very well-known character, and I think that's handled very well. But it never lets up. There are tons of page turns that had me squealing a little bit with excitement. I had a conversation last night, though, and Dave Wynn, mm-hmm, was asking if it was any good, and I said I loved it. And then he said, well, someone who's never watched Star Wars, would they be able to pick it up? And I genuinely don't know, because I can't detach myself far enough away from my fandom to be able to tell if, like, objectively, it stands on its own two feet. I think it does. I think it's still an enjoyable sci-fi action book.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm so close to Star Wars. I just adore the universe so much.
As your friend, James, and fellow podcaster, and also, you know, I'm not terribly keen on Star Wars, would you recommend it to me?
No.
Oh, okay.
Shall I take this one as well, as I am more of a lapsed fan?
Yeah.
Jason Aaron's amazing. He's a really good writer. He's also a really good corporate writer,
mm-hmm,
in that he can work well within constraints of a franchise and do everything he needs to. And John Cassaday, when given enough time, is an amazing artist. And Laura Martin's colour on this is absolutely gorgeous as well, I think. Mm. The design, all of the designs, all of the best of the designs and the look of everything from the film is reflected in this, in this. I think that it is basically the best possible comic you could get based on Star Wars, mm-hmm, set between those two films.
Yeah.
With all of the characters in,
mm-hmm,
by Jason Aaron, John Cassaday, and Laura Martin.
Yep.
I don't know if I need to read the second issue, though, personally, because my one problem with it is that it doesn't just tick the boxes, it ticks literally every single one of the boxes, every single beat. And there is a level at which, because I've been watching these films for 30 years or however long as well.
No, you've been watching them for about 38 years.
Is that how long they've been around? How long have they been around?
77, so about 38 years.
Oh, my God. James is right that there are Easter eggs in this, but I don't know what's left if you take all of the Easter eggs
that's true. Although, in terms of not wanting to read issue two, there is one Easter egg in particular that I'm really curious to see if it plays out how I think it is, because there's a point where Luke, using the Force, hears, obviously he talks to Ben Kenobi, because otherwise that wouldn't be that boxed it. But he uses the Force to realise that there's an issue he needs to deal with, and there's a character there from the Clone Wars, or a character who looks like one of the characters from the Clone Wars, whose fate wasn't sealed in any of the films or the Clone Wars. And I'm just umming and ahhing in terms of, like, well, maybe that...
What's could, going on there? See, yeah. I maybe even missed that. The action is really good. The bits of action are really good, but so much of the character interplay, like they're in disguise, but they're not just in disguise. They're in Corellian guard disguise, which Tatooine guard disguise, which is the disguise that Lando Calrissian has in Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. Now, as someone who quite who thought that was fucking mm-hmm. cool when Lando Calrissian yeah. turned up like that in there, for me it's a little bit weird that they stick that in at this stage, and people get to invert lines from the film and from the films, and they get to be put in roles that are really similar to stuff that happens in the film. But there is an element for me where, and it's possible that they wanted to get all that done so that you definitely, so there was something there for all of the big Star Wars fans who were maybe coming back to comics for this one. And maybe it'll tail off a little bit in the second issue. But like the Adventure Time comic, I did wonder what was there for anyone who hadn't already drunk the Kool-Aid a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. After 24 hours to sort of ruminate on it, I'm not sure. I still can't fully detach myself because I've got to confess I loved it.
It's a gorgeous slice of comics. Yeah, the colour in it's amazing. Yeah,
it's a lovely comic. It's really enjoyable. It ticks all of my comic book boxes for the most part. It's as well as all my Star Wars boxes. I've got a lot of boxes, Nick.
Because one of your biggest comic book boxes is it has to have a Wookiee in.
No, I like
or David Wynn. At the very least, it has to have one or the other.
But these sort of stories, I like to whip along. I like it to whip along. I like to get to the last page and I can't believe I've read the whole comic already. I like that. With these sort of action, adventure and superhero comics, you know, big two comics, I want to feel like I haven't been reading for a long time because I've enjoyed it so much. And that book totally delivered. This book totally delivered on that. It was great. There's some lovely moments.
To be honest, Marvel could have. Part of the problem with Marvel's original Star Wars comics and what quite often happens with licensed comics is publishers know people are going to buy them, so they don't throw their really big creators at them. And this creative team is a pretty amazing creative team. It's really good.
Yeah, to be fair, though, the amount of spin-offs that are coming out, I think they probably used everyone on their payroll, haven't they?
Kieran Gillen and Darth Vader, looking forward to that.
That does look good. I got really excited and saw that they're doing a hardcover reissue of the original Marvel stories, and then remembered that a friend of mine had given me all of his UK Marvel. I don't need it.
That's me he's talking about.
I really appreciate it as well. If only because you're going to hate me as well, because essentially I'm holding those in trust for my daughter as much as anything.
No, I don't hate you. I couldn't hate you for that. Well, I was just going to use them to colour in.
Fair enough.
Did you have anything else to say about Star Wars?
No.
Okay, good. Shall we listen to Kiha talking about L. Frank Baum adventures? L. Frank Baum, famously writer of the Oz books. But I don't know if that's what this is about, so Kiha will tell us.
Hello, Isheries. Kiha here from Dissecting Worlds. This time I'm discussing L. Frank Baum's The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus. The graphic novel adaptation by Michael Ploeg. Michael Ploeg is an animator who was... Sorry, not an animator. An artist involved in Marvel Man-Thing and Werewolf and Frankenstein, amongst others. He also has done a lot of work storyboarding in Hollywood. This is a hardback volume, a little larger than UK annual size, and it's a really fun little story. I haven't read the original story novella by the creator of The Wizard of Oz. That said, you get a very charming fairy tale. Nothing linked to Saint Nick. Claus's origins are as a foundling. That the giant sees about to be eaten by a lion and insists that the lion adopts him rather than consumes him. A wood nymph fears of it and will have nothing of it, so he's adopted and basically lives amongst this population of immortals before gradually Mowgli-like returning to the world of men with a conviction to do good. There's also demons who are responsible for planting ill discipline and evil thoughts in little children, and as the parents of a nearly 3-year-old, that's quite an appealing concept, but maybe that's something for 2 grown men. Which is Antics Vex, so there's kind of a fantasy story there that comes off in a very well realised battle scene. As you might be able to tell, it goes for kind of a timeless folkloric explanation there's no Christianity in it. I don't know if that's reflected in the original source material. The storytelling's great. The artwork is all painted artwork. Great use of shadow and shade. It kind of has a timeless story book feel to it. There is immortals are creatively envisaged, you know, from the demon of the north wind to kind of mermen to the antagonistic demons to the giants to the nymphs to the sort of elf and dwarf analogues who have a slightly funny name. But it's great little stuff, and all the kind of stuff that's part of the contemporary Father Christmas legend. So the elves in the workshop, they're going down the chimney, they're all explained. Obviously, it's too old for my kids, it's too wordy. I think sort of a bright 6-year-old will probably get a lot from it, maybe even a bright 5-year-old. But yeah, it's a lovely little volume, and I wholeheartedly recommend it.
Cool.
Wow, I've been entertained and informed. I love his voice too, for a dwarf.
You like Northerns though, don't you?
I do, yeah, really. It's one of those things, isn't it, you know, where you're nasty to the ones you like the most, you bastard.
Yeah, you always hurt the ones you love.
Mm.
Yeah, that's true. It's used as an excuse for a lot of really heinous behaviour. Or heinous.
You're
go
a heinous.
Heinous? Heinous sounds
let's call the whole thing off.
Jane!
Yes?
Jane, what have you got there, Jane?
I have a book to talk about.
What is it, though?
It is
if it's the Bible, I'm leaving.
No. God, we'll be here all day.
God, we would.
Yeah. It's the second book in the series Rust, which is by Royden Lepp, who is drawer of this book. This second book is called Secrets of the Cell. Oh, it's much more eloquent. Is that the right word?
Don't know yet.
more context, Jane.
It is a word.
Oh, good. Yeah. He's written and illustrated by, rather than drawer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is a more eloquent way of putting it. But who coined drawer?
Yeah, I'm going to say me.
Was it you who coined drawer?
Yeah. On the Momcast. Yeah, on the Momcast.
Drawer is good.
Mm.
But do we feel we've matured to the point where we've grown beyond it?
Not me, mate, but Jane's right. She was being more eloquent. Sorry.
That is more eloquent.
Good. Got something right today.
I don't know whether that was passive-aggressive.
Oh, no, it wasn't passive-aggressive. I'm just pleased.
Oh, good.
Secrets of the Cell. So in the first book, we were introduced to Rowan and his brother, whose name I can't remember, so I'll have to... Oswald, on the Taylor farm. So Rowan, his older brother, Oswald is the younger, and it's the Taylor farm. And their mother is still alive, but their father went out. There's been a big war, and it's set in Middle America, but we don't know what time it is, other than it made me think a little bit of Interstellar, actually. Obviously, Interstellar felt like a bit like this thing that Rust is set in, because there's been resources are sparse,
yeah,
but technology has kind of advanced, but it's a bit steampunky as well. Mm. So they have these sort of robot war machines, but they were not high tech, they were very functional. And the war has finished and people are struggling and trying to get on with life, and their father didn't come back. So they don't know if he's dead or alive, but the narrative in the book is Rowan actually writing to his father and telling him about things that are happening. So in the first book, they have a new addition to the farm in the form of Jet Jones. And Jet Jones is a boy who has a jetpack. And he doesn't say very much, and he crash lands into the farm, causes a lot of uproar, and is actually proving himself quite useful to the family. Just putting Jet Jones to one side, because he's the main feature of this story. This book, we saw more about the Taylor farm, and there was a lot more around what fates are held for them. So for Rowan and his younger brother, Oswald actually lost his arm. I think it was during the explosion of the war. So, you know, what he can do is quite limited, but his older brother wants him to go out and have a life. But farming is all they know, and it, you know, university and things like that, it's not necessarily something that is as accessible as they want it to be. Their local farms are closing down, or they're struggling to, and Rowan's one of his best friend growing up, as a girl, I can't remember her name, I will find it for you though, listener. She's going off to university, and she's going off to pursue things in the city. She's had to sort of stay behind to help out when Jet Jones arrived, because she'd missed her train. So she's in this quite a bit with Rowan, and they're reminiscing about when they were kids, and there's a bit about, because they're, you know, they're in their early 20s. It's quite obvious that if she were to stay there, they would probably, Jessie, her name is, oh, how did I forget that?
I don't know.
That's awful, isn't it? It's quite obvious that they would get married and settle down. There's definitely something there. There's definitely an expectation in terms of a stereotype. So there's that element still going on. But the main feature of the story is Jet Jones and where he's come from, who he is, why he's there, why he's being chased by a machine, which they've managed to disable. And then there's a stranger that comes to the farm looking for Jet Jones. So we find out that Jet was instrumental to the war. His purpose was very instrumental. And in terms of the technology itself, it seems like he was quite groundbreaking and going further, breaking his code almost, and leaving his responsibility, well, leaving his purpose behind. And we learn that that is why he's being pursued. It's quite nice because Oswald has seen some very unusual things that Jet has done and is quite freaked out by him, doesn't really trust him, and wants to tell his older brother, but his older brother's preoccupied and Jesse's around and he doesn't feel quite comfortable. So he's sort of dealing with what he's seen and what he's learned about Jet. Don't want to spoil too much of the story. Definitely highly recommend you read this book. Definitely read the first book as well. I will ask Nick very kindly to put that in the show notes.
Yep.
And the third one is due out hopefully soon, if not already. I'll have to double check that one. The story's great. There isn't much dialogue in a lot of the panels, but the art's incredible. It is like steampunky colour palettes, feels quite olden, you know.
It's rusty.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's a spectacular chase in this book. It's just so beautifully drawn, and the sequence is just superb. This book, I mean, it's a chunky old book. It's
gorgeous hardcover.
Yeah, gorgeous.
It's like got this weird soft sort of old-fashioned material on the cover.
It looks like an old book that's had like the dust that's had the dust jacket removed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It didn't come with a dust jacket.
No.
I got it in Dave's Comics in Brighton.
Wasn't cheap either, so no. You obviously wanted it.
Yeah, I did. It was the only copy I could find. what size is that? Is that
That would be A5, I think.
Yeah. It's a little bigger than A5.
Yeah, a little bigger than A5. And it's 200 pages. It's a dense book, and there's a lot going on as well.
Who's the publisher? It's a gorgeous
Archaea.
Yeah, it's one of Archaea's that, when they go to town on a presentation, it tends to be really nice.
It's properly beautiful.
No, it is gorgeous. But this chase sequence, because it's in the air, so they're flying. It's a flying chase sequence. But the sheer representation of the speed is just really, really incredible. It's really, you really get, you know, it's very rarely in the book you think, yeah, oh, they're going fast. Not like fast, that, you know, that instant reaction of fast, not, oh, right, they're going fast. Just that kind of feeling that you
get. Does it have a kind of... Is the style, because I can't really tell from over here, but is it like a kind of an almost animatory style, like a Scott Morse or a...
It's quite cartoony, if you don't know.
Yeah, so... No, I guess animate... Yeah, animator's probably an accurate way of saying it. I mean, it's just... It's a gorgeous comic. Yeah. It'd be amazing as an actual cartoon.
Well, because a lot of... I think there's a lot of... I mean, I don't know about the creator on that, but there's a lot of bleed-through now between people who are trained as animators and people who end up working in comics. And those people, like I mentioned Scott Morse, but those people tend to be really good at quite simple character designs, but being able to present movement on a page, which is exactly what you're describing.
Yeah, so it could sort of...
Because I guess they come from a background where... they're drawing to a visual medium all the time with storyboarding and stuff like that. So, yeah. It looks great.
No, it's gorgeous. And in the back of this book, I think this is the only format you can get it in, the hardback, there's a reprint of one of the stories they published for Free Comic Book Day, and I think it was in 2012 that it came out. So I've read that one, so it's quite nice to see it again and have it as part of the book as well.
Arkea always do amazing stuff for Free Comic
Book. Always.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
I think you spotlighted that, the first book, for the Momcast, so I'll try and find a link for that and put that in the show notes
as well.
Jane did,
it was good.
Yeah.
Mm. As was that.
Thank you. Yeah, so gorgeous book, brilliant story. Can't wait for the next instalment. I highly recommend you go and find the first book and the second book and read them.
Cool. Thanks, Jane. That's awesome. So what are you guys up to the rest of your week? Anything interesting? James, more phlegm? Bit of earwax?
I'm doing many things. Many things.
Three of them.
I might make... No, only one of them. I might make a start on the... model kit of Battlestar Galactica that I've got.
Oh yeah, because you built an
aircraft. It's a Red Arrow's Hawk jet.
What Battlestar Galactica?
It's new school.
But which is it? The actual Battlestar Galactica, or is it a Viper, or what is it?
I wouldn't have called it Battlestar Galactica if it wasn't Battlestar Galactica. I'd have said it's a Viper from Battlestar Galactica.
So it's Battlestar Galactica. Battlestar Galactica.
It's the Battlestar named Galactica,
or BSG. Some people call it
BSG.
Battlestar Galactica. If it was on IMDb, it would Battlestar Galactica with brackets.
Mm.
What year was it? 2000.
Oh, it was 2000s. Something. It started in the early noughties, actually, didn't it? Yeah.
It's good. That's a good show. I should rewatch it at some point.
It's what you've got to be psychologically prepared to, because it's a submarine. It's Daz Boot, isn't it, in space? So you've got to.
It's very military for the beginning.
Mm.
For the first two thirds of it, it's very military, and then it becomes very spiritual. Very, very quick.
But I find it's increasingly claustrophobic as the series goes on.
Yes. Definitely, it does feel like it's closing in on you in many ways. Jane, what are you up to?
There's lots of travelling to see various parents that are related to me or my life partner.
Mm-hmm.
So not any random parents.
But are you looking forward to it?
Yes,
or is it obligation?
Oh, no, I'm looking forward to it. Some of it is obligation, but, that's... That's what parents are.
Well,
really,
I'm seeing the family on Sunday for a soup lunch.
Oh, I'm seeing Saturday. And then on Sunday, I don't know yet.
I got a phone call from my dad. I feel a little bit bad about it, actually, because I spent the whole phone call thinking, why are you calling me? This is really weird. Because he called me, and when I said, how are you? He said, oh, I'm just calling you to tell you I'm going to Cyprus for a couple of weeks. Just I found a cheap ticket, so I'm travelling out there. And don't tell anyone because I want to surprise them. Then no one is going to listen to this. And so I spent a lot of the phone call thinking, why is he never tell what? I mean, I never know where he is because my parents don't tell me stuff like this.
Yeah.
It wasn't until afterwards that I thought that maybe he just wanted to talk to me, and that was his opening gambit for conversation. But we got so snarled up on it that ended up being what the whole conversation was about.
I used to feel like that when my mum called, but I'm finding that therapy is actually helping that a great deal.
Maybe I need to get in some therapy. But what I'm hoping is that the ball of phlegm that's the same shape as my head but slightly smaller that's inside my head either shrinks to the extent where it's not all my head can think about, or at least moves a little bit so that I can breathe properly again.
I was going to ask you guys, what's the...
Do that again, because it sounded like Chewbacca.
I was going to ask you guys, and people in Southampton might be interested if you're old. Tom Hengley, ex of the Inspiral Carpets, is playing in Southampton on the 2nd of April, which is a Thursday, the day before Good Friday. We should do a podcast and go and see Tom Hengley together.
You like the Inspiral Carpets,
yeah,
don't you?
It'd be good. It'd be an acoustic set, live music. You'll come, won't you?
Which one was he in the Inspiral Carpets?
The singer.
Yeah, okay.
Was he?
Mm.
I thought that was...
Tom Hengley. Are you thinking of Clint Boone, the keyboardist?
I get very confused. Which one was it that sang Directing Traffic?
Tom Hengley.
Oh. Which one was it who sang their other songs?
Tom Hengley.
That's
who's the, that who's the famous one, though? Who's Tim Burgess? Oh, he's the Charlatan.
Jesus wept. But that'd be a nice thing to do.
I see a skeleton with skin.
That's in Spiral Carpets.
Is that Tom Hengley?
Yes.
Well, we can do a Tom Hengley
So
impression.
If you're in Southampton, hopefully I'll persuade these guys. We'll be there on the 2nd of April. It'd be like a real hoedown. Because it's a day off the next day. We could all go out and have fun. We never do that anymore.
I'm always having fun.
I don't.
I was listening to a very good podcast today about... being new parents, but I think they were both. I think both of the podcasters were younger than James and I are.
Jeez.
And they were talking about they were talking about the expectation when you have kids that you'll stop doing all of this, that you'll stop doing all of this fun stuff, and your life will become entirely about the kids. And I was just thinking, well, I don't think James and I ever really had that. And then I realised that like I'd stopped doing fun stuff a long time.
Yeah, no, before. I'd already stopped having fun about sort of 34.
Yeah, so. mid 30s for me as well.
Yeah. I think it's what actually I know that it's when I went to see the O2 Festival. A friend of mine was a big Jay-Z fan. We went to see the O2 Festival in London. That was the last time, in inverted commas, I went out and had fun in an old fashioned 90s kind of way.
Shall we go?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm having chicken and veg for dinner. I'm quite hungry.
Thank you, listener. You're awesome.
Bye. Because that's the thing with porn, isn't it?
That is what a reach round is, isn't it?
It looks so easy.
I think so.
Porn looks so easy because it's doing something that I think the vast majority of us enjoy. I know there's like people who don't necessarily enjoy it, so I'm checking my enjoying sex privilege. But it looks so easy. It's so... I find that I forget that there's probably at least half a dozen people stood behind the camera while these two people are engaging in the most intimate acts two humans can...
Well, also, sometimes
together.
They've got their legs all stretched up in all sorts of different places.
Yeah, but I find if you do that sort of thing, it just keeps you limber while you're doing it. Because I suffer from cramp. So if I'm on one position too long, I tend to cramp up. So I have to be... for a fat man, I'm relatively sort of nubile and limber.
What doesn't happen in enough pornography, or maybe it's just because I'm picking the wrong pornography to watch, is there isn't enough pornography that has a less tall guy...
Mm.
And a slightly taller woman. It's nearly always a more petite woman and a really tall guy.
Yeah.
And so there's all this ragdoll stuff going, where the man can just pick the lady up and do whatever he wants with her.
Yeah.
And as a mental stimulant, that works fine for me.
Yeah.
But as an instructional film, it doesn't really do me any favours. I need something that gives me a sense of what a less tall man.
Well, you do. I'm all right. I'm 6 foot three and I'm quite big built.
Isn't Ron Jeremy really quite short?
Ron
Jeremy quite short.
Ron Jeremy is quite short.
Not when he's laid down.
But for all...
Massive gut.
For all our regular joking about how much I look like him, I don't actually that much... And he is quite gross. I don't really want to watch pornography of him in it.
Oh,
that's my point. I don't. I choose not to watch. My problem is I like.
Does he still do it? I'm thinking
like
more when he's younger days.
Videos.
He's mostly in cameos now, isn't he? Rather than sort of actually, performing.
I think that's a misunderstanding. I think cameos are a stage name for just one guy, isn't it? the Word Up guy? Isn't it just one guy? I don't know.
Wasn't
I
think Cameo a band?
I don't. I only remember the one guy with the voice like this.
Yeah, I remember.
He talked like this.
It's your word up.
It's a cold word.
It is.
So, listener, this is We Have Issues. It's episode number 14, apparently.
Unlucky for some.